everybody. Welcome to the Scary Dad Podcast. This is your host, Billy. For this little first segment, I'm alone, and I will tell you why. When Scott and I got together, we recorded the first little pre-roll, you know, right after the music. We talked about our day and how things were going. And then I meant to hit the pause button to give myself a little marker for this promo that we got coming up. And apparently, I hit delete instead. So, like, the first couple of minutes of us just chatting just disappeared off into the ether. So what we're going to do today, before we get into the heart of the show, as you heard on our last episode, we've been talking, kind of going back and forth with the guys from the Hail Ming Power Hour. Shout out to Rick over there. He and I have been kind of chatting back and forth, and it's a really great show. You guys really need to check it out. And they were kind enough to play one of our promos on the Short Bus Cinema, which is one of their other shows, and we're going to play their promo as well, so you can kind of hear what they're about and check it out. At the same time, the promo that they played on their show, we're going to show you here, because I'm a little bit proud of it. It was one of those things I kind of cut together, not really having a whole lot of experience mixing stuff, and it came out what I thought was pretty freaking good. So anyway, Scott's with me in the next segment right after these promos. So first you're going to hear a promo for the Short Bus Cinema, followed quickly by the promo for the Scary Dad Podcast, and then you'll join me and Scott to talk about all things scary. Thanks a lot. And here is the Short Bus Cinema.
Bad movies. The world is full of them. From low-budget crap fests to downright unwatchable. And only two men are willing to watch them all. So climb in and take your seat. This is Short Bus Cinema.
Let's do it.
Hey everyone, this is Johnny Krug from Kruger Nation.
And this is Rick Morgan from the Hail Ming Power Hour.
And we have decided to team up and take you where no one has gone before.
We're on a quest to find the world's worst movie, and we're doing it on the bus.
Driving through cult classics in every genre to find the holy grail of bad movies.
So if you're looking for something different and more fun than you can stand, then climb on in.
Short Bus Cinema is a proud member of Legion Podcasts.
That's right, yo!
Short Bus Cinema. We love to watch the movies you hate.
Dude, do you want to see something really scary?
It's like when you're sitting at home late at night reading some scary story or something, and the dog just hops up and, like, we runs out of the room for no reason.
Definitely need to check under the bed at that point.
So who said it best? Rob Zombie or Samuel L. Jackson?
That's a tough one.
Welcome to Bright Night.
Hey, this is Billy.
And this is Scott.
And this is the Scary Dad Podcast.
Join us as we talk about all things scary.
Imagine, dude, if you were still conscious for a few seconds, knowing your head was no longer attached to your body.
So, have you ever played around with a Ouija board?
You know, no, I haven't. And in, like, true poltergeist fashion. It was built on a graveyard.
Oh, man. If it's scary, cool, or something we find just plain interesting, we talk about it.
Every Monday, available on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher Radio, and on our website at scarydad.com.
Groovy.
All right, so how cool was that? I'm pretty proud of that one. It was the first one I ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So
it came out great, man. I definitely enjoyed it.
So now I got the bug, so I'll be starting to make some other little promos and maybe start using some sound effects and stuff in the show now.
Right.
So,
Well, yeah, I was thinking we need a soundboard. We need a Scary Dad soundboard.
We definitely do. Especially that little,
yeah,
the Wilhelm scream.
With some nice little quotes from some of our favorites, you know.
Exactly.
Captain Spaulding in there and a few other things.
We'll make one of those up. So anyway, let's get into the history segment. It's kind of long, so you're going to have to hold on to your shorts here. But a lot of important stuff happened this date, June 5th. So on this date in 1837, the city of Houston was incorporated by the Republic of Texas. So before today, 1837, there was no Houston.
All of a sudden, yeah, there was one.
Now there is one.
I woke up the next morning, and there was.
Yep. 1917, conscription for World War I begins. It's called Army Registration Day. So, once again, yesterday, you didn't have to go off to war just on a whim, and today you do. 1946, the fire in the LaSalle Hotel in Chicago kills 61 people. You know, here, I mean, I know there's a whole lot of safety features and sprinklers and things that are, you know, people don't smoke in them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't hear about a whole lot of people dying in hotel fires anymore.
No.
It used to happen quite often.
Right. Yes, it did.
On this date, 1956, Elvis Presley sings Hound Dog on the Milton Berle Show. And he was scandalized the entire nation by his suggestive hip movements. So you think about some of the crazy stuff that's on TV now, just on
network
TV.
Yeah, that's what they were worried about.
All the innuendos that are in children's cartoons and stuff. And think about that. The nation was scandalized.
You know, as a child, my dad loved people. He loved meeting people. He was a guy that spent a lot of time hitchhiking when he was young. He hitchhiked from California to Louisiana at one time. He was friends with all the local winos in my hometown, and there was one he used to call Groundhog. And he used to pay Groundhog a couple bucks to come break leaves and stuff, and Groundhog would always entertain me by singing Ain't Nothing But a Groundhog, as he pretended to play air guitar with the rake.
Yeah, nice.
It's one of my childhood memories from when I was little, man. He used to love it whenever Groundhog would come over.
That's cool. This date in 1968, Robert Kennedy is shot. He dies the next day.
The brother.
The younger brother of John F.
Yep.
This date in 1981, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report reports a rare form of pneumonia that turns out to be the first recognized AIDS cases. Talk about scary.
Yeah.
I mean,
That just, because nobody understood it. There was so much myth out there. You know, nobody knew really what was going on.
Well, even the doctors didn't know.
Right.
Anytime there's some sort of quick spreading, what you know, it's still an epidemic.
Right. Well, think about the movies like Quarantine and all kind of other films that, you know, feed into the fear of something spreading like that.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a real life quarantine, you know.
Well, and I think hindsight's is what it is, but you know, like after after World War I, the Spanish flu killed more people than the war did.
Yeah,
you know, it was a pandemic, and it was a global pandemic, and it killed a tremendous amount of people. And if you look that up on Google, you'll see pictures of people just going about their everyday lives with dead people laying on the sidewalk.
Right.
You know, people were just falling down dead. It was like The Stand.
And it was a COVID unsanitary, and just caused it made it worse.
When AIDS was discovered, it's fast acting and uncurable, and they don't know what causes it. Is it bloodborne? Is it airborne?
Right.
What is it? We don't know. Of course, they're going to buckle down.
Yeah.
Now, certainly, there was a whole lot of unnecessary negativity that went along with it, you know.
Right.
But I can't imagine. I was there. I mean, I wasn't in LA in 1981, but I was alive, and I remember. Dude, everybody was scared of that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody knew what was going on. You know, one day it was like it was airborne. Next day you could get it from toilet seats. Mm-hmm. Next day you could get it from brushing by somebody
and
on
nobody,
the subway.
Nobody was sure.
Nobody knew what could happen. So, on this date in 2001, Tropical Storm Allison moves through Houston.
You know,
floods the hell out of it.
I closed on my house the week before. And I'm sitting in Louisiana watching this, and I'm thinking my house is totally underwater. But where we were at didn't have much flooding. But that was a mess, man. That was
absolutely.
That was a wild time.
Well, I've told the story before about how that was the best argument over nothing that I ever got into. If you hadn't heard the episode, so basically, I was supposed to go to work that night, and I worked downtown at night, and Allison was coming in, and. I got in a fight with a girlfriend, and I don't remember what it was about, but we were on the phone, and we were fighting, and the weather got bad, and the fight went long, And this was one of those like make it break it fights. If I hang up, we're over with, right? So finally got off the phone, called my boss, was like, man, the weather's real bad. And, you know, it would give enough time to like for the weather to have gotten bad enough that I called in. He's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's really bad. You know, I don't think we're gonna get anything done tonight. Later that evening, or maybe the next morning, the city's showing video of areas of Houston that are flooded, and one of the areas you saw semi trucks smokestacks sticking out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you could see of the truck,
right?
And that was parked where I normally park my car.
Good Lord, man.
So it would have been 18 feet deep there,
right?
You know, and that's the water had receded some,
yeah,
to the top of that truck. So,
and for those of you listeners out there that aren't familiar with Houston, Houston is essentially, it's not as bad as New Orleans, but it's essentially a bowl, and there's a lot of concrete in Houston and development, and water just doesn't have anywhere to go, and mm-hmm. there's all these real low spots off the freeways where there's now they have gauges so that you can see before you drive into it how deep the water is. But I remember there was about a year or 2 years where they were finding dead. Every time it would flood, they'd find dead people drowned. They
right.
drove into the water and got stuck there.
Well, it's like a flash flood. That's yep. what happens. It's a artificial flash flood because it rains and all of the spillways overflow and just flood into the streets. And you're standing there on dry land 1 minute and then it's 10 feet deep the very next minute.
Right.
And it's gotten a lot better, but every time there is a major rain, somebody decides
they
want to try to chance it. They want to drive in. But yeah, $5.5 billion in damages. Horrible.
And look up the pictures. Google them for Tropical Storm Allison. There's people kayaking down Interstate 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's unbelievable how bad it was, and the mosquitoes afterwards. Good Lord, they were bad.
I was watching. I mean, where I was in town, this is how Houston is too. So where I was in town, everything from the Beltway east was flooded. I lived about half a mile yeah. west of the Beltway. Everything west of the Beltway was not flooded. So the new Radiohead record had just come out, and I drove west out to Highway 6, and I wasn't on my way to buy Radiohead. I was actually on my way to buy batteries, but I went to Best Buy to buy batteries. And the new Radiohead record was there, and I went home and I threw it on. I'm listening to it with the TV on, seeing what's going on. It's weird music videos because I'm watching high water rescues on neighborhoods like 2 miles to the east of me, and I'm high and dry. It was very surreal. And then you put a Radiohead soundtrack to that, and all right, notable births. Happy birthday, or what have you, to the following people. Pat Garrett, the guy who killed Billy the Kid.
Or did he? Remember Brushy Bill Roberts? He did claim he was Billy the Kid.
1878, Pancho Villa was born.
Mexican outlaw,
the only one that's ever ran a successful invasion of the United States and lived to tell about it. 1919, you remember this guy from all his children's books. Richard Scarry. The little busy people.
Yeah.
All the little animals. 1949, Ken Follett, who wrote Pillars of the Earth.
Okay.
It's the one who it was a big Oprah book a while back. It's the whole big epic about building the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
Good book. You should read it. It puts a lot into perspective whenever, especially you see historical architecture, about how hard it really was for them to do that.
Right.
Not really scary, but I actually picked up at Goodwill for $2. I picked up a first edition, first print of that the other day.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to throw that up on eBay and see if I can't make 10 bucks. This one's pretty scary. 1956, Kenny G. Now that I've mentioned him, you've got his smooth saxophone sounds.
Yeah, very mellow jazz. I remember on the show World's Dumbest, I used to watch it all the time on True TV. And there was one where Kenny G was trying to break the record for the longest note played. They just kept cutting to him during the whole hour show, and it was giving everybody a headache. But yeah, he
did he win?
Yeah, he ended up breaking the record. As a matter of fact, I remember I actually bought tickets to one of his concerts once for an ex.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's love, dude.
No shit. It was like second row of Kenny G. It was horrible, man.
Oof. 1967, Ron Livingston.
Hey, Peter, man. Turn on panel 9.
From Office Space.
And Jethro from...
No, that's a different guy.
It is a different guy.
Livingston,
okay.
Was Peter.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's another movie I'm thinking of that he was in. Damn it, I can't remember what it is. But yeah, his Office Space role was just...
so perfect. In 1971, Mark Wahlberg.
Marky Mark.
Oh, yeah.
And that funky bunch.
Notable deaths. 1993, we lost Conway Twitty, country star extraordinaire. 2002, Dee Dee Ramone left us. 2004, Ronald Reagan left us.
Wow.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
No, it doesn't.
And 2012, Ray Bradbury, science fiction.
A few books up there, as a matter of fact.
So that's horror. Do you have anything in movie news?
Or we I got a little bit, not too much. One thing, this summer we see the beginning of filming of the Slender Man movie. So that's going into production here pretty soon. Filming will run from June 19th to July 28th. And they'll be looking for extras out where they're filming it. I believe it's in Boston, I believe. Yes, they'll be filming in Boston, so that'll be coming here pretty soon. What else do I have here? My stuff stayed. There is a new series coming to AMC to complement The Walking Dead here pretty soon, which is called... let me pull it up real quick.
Another Walking Dead. Yeah, that Fear of the Walking Dead, I never could get into that one.
Nah.
It just... that didn't make sense. It's like all the things that people do...
Well, this next one's coming up. It's called The Terror. It's going to be starring David... Gaganich and Sue Hugh. It's a new anthology drama series set at sea, based on the best-selling novel by author Dan Simmons of the same name.
Okay, so, I've heard about that.
That ought to be
the book.
Nice little compliment. Yeah, I heard of the book. Right. So they'll be working on something to, like I said, compliment that genre that AMC has seemed to have been so successful with. Even though I heard recently that I don't watch a whole lot of Walking Dead. I just don't have time to.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that it's starting to jump the shark almost lately.
It's not that so much that it jumped the shark. Well, I take that back. There's a good argument that it has jumped the shark, but the problem is that what started off in the early seasons as a character-driven drama, that the surroundings and the menace of the Walking Dead themselves was, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a driver, but it was a human drama. You cared about the characters, and you wanted to see them through. Even the ones that you didn't like were pivotal. Like and it was real world. It's like Michael Rooker's character was in it.
Okay.
Michael Rooker's character was an unlikable person, but he was also extremely skilled at killing zombies.
Okay.
And, you know, he had his couple of turns, and so although he was a bad guy, you cared about him. And not maybe didn't... you definitely wanted to see him get killed, or at least dispatched, but you didn't... he wasn't annoying. You weren't just like... this guy was brought on specifically to be zombie food.
Right.
Which is, they've got a lot of that now. And it's like all of this politics between three different tribes, and then you've got Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Negan, and all he does is monologue.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got entire episodes where if you see a zombie, it's because they threw it in there at last minute because they forgot, oh yeah, this is a zombie show and not General Hospital.
So soap opera, right.
So if they were to cut out about half the talking and put in a little bit more action and stuff, they could get it back real quick because you still do care. But God, it's boring. Like, right. we skipped, my wife and I buy it on Amazon episode by episode because mm-hmm. we don't have AMC. We didn't care enough to like follow it as it was going because nobody was spoiling anything.
Right.
And then whenever we did, we were about 6 episodes behind. We watched one and we're like, well, that was a waste. Let's skip past to the season finale. So that's, but it's because it's boring. They're not doing anything. So they said that they're going to try to throw some more action in, which for an action show, you'd kind of hope they did.
Right. One more thing, just to go over it. I saw this article, and it's an interesting topic that I figured we could just kick around a little bit. Are you familiar with David Lynch, director?
I'm familiar with him. I'm not a whole lot of his work.
He's currently working on the reboot of Twin Peaks for Showtime. He did an interview recently where he was asked about movie trailers. And he said he doesn't care for movie trailers at all. He doesn't, with Twin Peaks, they're not doing a whole lot of pre-show marketing. And what he thinks is, these days, movie trailers practically tell the whole story. I think it's really harmful for me personally. I don't want to know anything when I go into a theater. I like to discover it, get into that world, try to get as good of a picture and sound as possible with no interruptions so you can have an experience. And anything that putrefies that is not good. I actually agree with him to a certain extent, because it seems as though trailers nowadays show every good scene from a movie in the trailer to get you to go see it.
I agree.
And you've already seen the movie. By the time you get in, you've already seen the movie.
I agree. I totally agree. There's absolutely nothing...
Nothing else for surprise.
Well, no. I was going to say, there's nothing with which to disagree with you on this point, except once we break out of here, whenever you're sitting around alone tonight, go to YouTube and look up some old trailers from like the 70s and 80s. They're even more so. They're like 3 minutes long.
Yeah, they show long trailers.
They show every scene. Like the trailer for Aliens, like that was groundbreaking because it didn't show anything.
Right.
And everybody was like, what's going on? You're supposed to tell the whole story. But dude, watch the trailer for Star Wars. It's like 4 minutes long. It tells the whole movie. It shows the Death Star exploding. I mean, it shows everything.
Right.
Like all the good stuff. There's just the trailer for Gremlins. Like there's so much stuff that's just like, but they still sold. People still went. So yes, he's right. But I don't know if it's getting worse or getting better. But maybe that's all you have is a shitty movie. So you have to like draw them in with the good parts.
Right, right. That's what happens a lot. And I did get to watch the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes VHS that I recently picked up.
Oh yeah.
That movie is still, it just still cracks me up. It's the funniest thing. It's just ridiculous. Low budget, you know, there's so many jokes in it.
Good stuff.
I haven't watched part 2 yet, but I'll be getting to that soon. But that's it for me.
All right. Look at this. So anyway, let's get into the soundtrack of Doom. There was the reason we were going to do this episode a few weeks back. I don't know. We ended up getting preempted or whatever, but I recently reread Christine by Stephen King, and I never noticed it in the first read-through. I mean, he does it in a lot of his books, but what he'll do is he'll start chapters with music, with song lyrics that are pertinent to whatever's going on in the story. So in Christine, especially because it's all about teenagers and cars or whatever, so he's got all of these chapter headings that have lyrics from the first part is teenage love songs, and then teenage car songs, and then finally teenage death songs. And what happens is he's got just like a snippet of lyrics, but if you know the song, then it kind of gets you in your head. So right. As you're reading the chapter, you kind of have that song rolling through and plays like a soundtrack to the chapter. It's a really cool effect, and I never really noticed it before, but it's been kind of kicking around in my brain for the last like 3 or 4 weeks since I finished the book of like, man, we should really do an episode on, you know, music inside of horror, scary songs or songs that were effectively used.
Right.
And, you know, just some examples in Christine, the teenage death songs, you know, a lot of these you'll hear, but like Last Kiss by Wayne Cochran, Pearl Jam redid it. But that's the one, you know, it's like, we're out for a date in my daddy's car. We hadn't driven very far, and they get in a wreck. And anyway, he survives, but she dies in his arms. And, you know, there was a whole lot of that kind of stuff back in the 60s. You know, cars and hot rods and the Beach Boys and different, you know. So I remember when I was a kid, my dad was getting me, you know, showing me all this old music. And one of them was Jan and Dean, Dead Man's Curve.
Yeah.
And he's telling me the story because you know, the main part of the song is like, won't come back from Dead Man's Curve. But Jan Barry actually crashed on Dead Man's Curve and ended up, he didn't die, but he ended up getting paralyzed.
Okay.
So he lived it. You know, and another one, like Riders on the Storm. That's one of those songs, you know, it's about a killer on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the sweet family will die. You know, but there's all this dark imagery in music.
A lot of music, yeah.
And, you know, rock and roll itself has been just completely riven by tragedy. From, you know, the earliest guys like Buddy Holly,
yeah, yeah, so I was
you know
of.
That kind of stuff. So we're just going to get into that. So, what do you know about the 27 Club?
Not too much. Well, I know a little bit. I know what it references and everything, but as far as the full list of members, no, I don't.
Well, the list that I've got is pretty damn long, and it's only about half of the people listed.
Right.
A lot of them are just backup singers, or yep. But. They're still
falls on with the
quite young, met with tragedy at the age of 27.
Mm-hmm.
And every time somebody dies, I think at this point they first check their age to see if they're part of the club. But the 27 Club started with Robert Johnson, who's kind of the king, or not the king, but the inventor of rock and roll. And we'll get to him in a minute. Well, we can talk about it now. How Robert Johnson with his Crossroad Blues.
Yeah, referenced in the movie Crossroads.
And he's very much given a elevated status as he's one of the ones that in Faustian fashion made a deal with the devil.
Yep.
He'd get temporary fame if he promised to give it all up at a young age.
Yeah, at a price.
At a high price. So Robert Johnson was the beginning. And then, you know, on this list, Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones, mm-hmm. Drowned in a Pool. Alan Blind Al Wilson from Canned Heat. Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison. Ron Pigpen McKenna, who from the Grateful Dead.
Okay.
You don't think about anybody from the Grateful Dead ever being 27 years old.
Right.
But he was.
He was at one time, huh?
Pete Ham from Badfinger, and then non-musician, I mean, he was a musician, but Basquiat, the graffiti artist, he was 27.
Okay.
Kurt Cobain, Kristen Pfaff from Hole, Jonathan Brandis, who wasn't a musician, but he was in It. He committed suicide at 27.
Okay.
Amy Winehouse. And then most recently, Anton Yelchin, the guy who played Chekhov in the new Star Trek. And there's just a tremendous amount of celebrities that tend to check out at age 27.
That's crazy how, you know, it's there's too much to be coincidence. You got to wonder what's going on. What kind of phenomenon is going on?
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, there. When I was doing research and found this list, you know, they said that it's not necessarily that the age of 27 is a specific age, but celebrities have a tendency, like, have a higher risk of death than others because they travel, they're exposed to so many people, the potential for stalkers, drugs and alcohol, all this stuff's just kind of given to them. And if you think 27, you think, oh, you know, 27, that's a man. It is. But I'm almost 42, and I think of myself at 27, I was an idiot. Yeah, you give me a few million dollars and a key to the world, I can't say that I wouldn't have done some really stupid stuff.
I was still skydiving at that age. So
I did some stuff in my early 20s that I shudder to think of now. You know, just being stupid.
Yeah.
Jumping off of bridges and, you know, that kind of stuff, and drunk driving and just being an idiot.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes they don't make it through. But, lots of really good music in that list right there.
Oh, yes, no doubt. You know? I think of Jimi Hendrix alone, as soon as you mention that name, it's like...
Yeah.
Think about, you know, if he wouldn't have died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just... That's what I always think about when these people die so young. You know, what could have been.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have... Well, you have their contemporaries that did survive that are still making good music.
Right. You know, like, the biggest ones are Foo Fighters, of course.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, Jimi Hendrix's contemporaries, people like Robert Plant,
yeah,
Jimmy Page, you know, they're winning Grammys for bluegrass albums. Like, they just explore their you know, they no longer need to sell a record to survive,
yeah,
so they can just kind of do what they want, and rather than burning out, sometimes they faded away, but other times they just became elders.
Yeah.
You know? But I've always been, I don't want to say fascinated, but every time, the other day whenever Chris Cornell died, my horror and music-loving brain started thinking, it's like, was he just late to the party? Because if you listen to Soundgarden lyrics, they're we said in our last meta episode how he was talking about the same kind of stuff as Cobain and, mm-hmm, and Staley, but he was just, it was elevated. It was to a higher level. Like, his despair was more literary.
More poetic.
But no less nihilistic, no less, yeah, desperate, no less full of despair, so... I'm always wondering about that. I have this curiosity, kind of that crossroads, sold the soul to the devil sort of thing. I think about it, and with people like Chris Cornell and maybe Heath Ledger, where it's like there's some hitman somewhere that's assigned to a celebrity, and they're like, well, he's had a good run, but go ahead and let's pull the trigger on this one, and he'll sell. He hasn't been selling enough albums. Let's give him a send out and close the books on this one.
Right.
It's a morbid thing to think about, but it could be.
Right.
You know.
Well, when you think of the number, the sheer number, the percentage wise of these talented people that die at young ages compared to everybody else, it's like, mm-hmm, I said, it's too much to be coincidence.
True.
You know, there's something behind it for sure, whether it be just emotionally not being able to mature because you begin life at, you know, just under the spotlight, and you have such a quick rise, you know, it's gives you kind of a, can give you a complex, a God complex almost.
Absolutely. And then at the same time, you know, you got people, like I said, you know, 27 years old, you got people that are young, they don't really have that much responsibility. You think about, like, Courtney Love reading Kurt Cobain's suicide note, where he's talking about how he hated the limelight and he just hated all this stuff, and she was answering back as she was reading the note, like, why didn't you just quit? You could have just left. You know, you didn't have any responsibility to anybody. Just, right, just stop it. You know, but they don't think that way. But then as you get a little bit older, you know, you're at your prime in 25, you hit 27, you start having kids, you start living, quote-unquote, a normal life, the pressure to be normal starts to set in.
Right.
And you can't be normal. You'll never be anything that could ever be normal.
Right.
You know? Then you have some people that just are unhealthy in the mind to begin with, and always looking for a reason, which is unfortunate.
Well, one story you look at, and of course this didn't end in total tragedy where he died, was Brian Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just what he went through mentally during his career, and just the amount of talent he has, you know, I've always been fascinated by his story.
Absolutely. Well, he already, I don't know if he would have had such mental health problems if his dad just didn't beat the hell out of him.
Right.
You know, and such a brilliant mind, and such a sensitive mind, that... And his dad whacked him in the head, and, like, he's deaf in one ear because his dad hit him. And so he made all of his songs in mono, but he was recording stereophonic music that he couldn't even hear. You know, like a modern-day Beethoven. It's insanity, but...
He's such an incredible story, man.
Mm-hmm.
He truly is. And, you know, and like I said, it took me a while to realize it, because when I grew up towards the end of the Beach Boys era, so it was... I just looked at him as a campy beach song group,
mm-hmm,
until I really started digging into them a little bit and just seeing what they were all about. And they were a serious music group.
You know? Oh, absolutely.
Everybody wanted to work with Brian Wilson. Everybody.
Singer, producer, musician, Oh yeah, very, very well respected.
Oh yeah,
it's almost funny now again because I come from a different perspective. You know, my dad was a DJ; he was always a fan of all kinds of different bands, mm-hmm. and I was the same way. It's like the Beach Boys.
Yeah, they did a song with the Fat Boys.
You know, like the Beach Boys, right? Like, it's like all that little beachy doo-wop, and he's like, oh no, he's like, you listen to what they're doing with their harmonies and simple melodies and. You know, different kinds of instruments. Like, he was the first one to play a theremin, which, you know, for us horror movie lovers, that's, you know,
yeah.
You know, that's that little weird sound effect that they used in horror movies, and he turned it into good vibrations. You know, he turned it into the Endless Summer. This weird sound oscillator. But he could play it.
Right.
You know, he could make it make the sounds he wanted it to make. So, total brilliance. And then, you know, his brother, he died young too. I don't think he wasn't 27, but he's the one, he jumped off the boat and cracked his head on the reef. You know, there's quite a bit of tragedy in the Beach Boys as well. Oh, you don't think about the Beach Boys as such a tragic story, but it really is.
It really is.
It's really, really rough.
You know, and I mean, you're looking at drugs and alcohol involved, mental illness, and it's, you know, the story behind them isn't, like I said, our generation didn't see them that way. You know, we saw them as the group that did a song with the Fat Boys, and they used to, you know, their TV specials every once in a while, you'd see them performing. What's his name from Full House?
John Stamos.
John Stamos, yeah. You know, that's who you thought of them as. You didn't really take them seriously, but they were, like I said, it's an awesome story. If you music lovers out there aren't familiar with it, check into it. It's a...
Well, and I mentioned it on a history segment, how the Beach Boys were friends with. Dennis Wilson was one of Charles Manson's disciples for a short time. But yeah, Charlie Manson like moved into the Wilsons' compound and like was hanging out and using their studio to write his weird ass music and stuff. You know, it's pretty rough. So, you know, speaking of the evil, you know, we talk about the crossroads and selling your soul to the devil, you know. There's Robert Johnson kind of... I mean, it's not Robert Johnson started it. There's always been... If you're familiar with Dr. Faustus. Dr. Faustus, it's an old story. It goes way back in... Right. You know, Faustus himself doesn't. But Dr. Faustus sold his soul to the devil, to Mephistopheles, for, I think, 20 years of earthly pleasures and power.
Yeah.
Power, knowledge, and pleasure. And then, at the end of 20 years, the devil came calling, and he had to give himself up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the violin player Paganini from back, you know, 1800s. He was one who they considered sold his soul to the devil because he was so good and so fast. He was like unnaturally fast, you know. And you look at people would look at him and be like, "That's
it's unnatural.
You can't do that. Like something's behind this." And then here in America with voodoo culture and Robert Johnson and that whole allure of the South in voodoo culture, it's Papa Legba.
Yeah,
who's the spirit of the crossroads.
Yeah,
so you go to the crossroads, so however many nights at midnight, and you make your promises, and if he favors you, or if he maybe doesn't favor you, then
he'll make a deal.
He'll make a deal. I wonder sometimes, you know, whether the deal's legit, or if you just happen to make it because you think you did.
You know,
just makes you practice more, or it's kind of like when you don't know how to ride a bicycle, and your parents are like, you can do it, and then suddenly you can do it.
Well, it's just another reference in that regard is just like, you know, somebody raising a kid, telling the whole time they're a wonderful singer, you're a great singer, you're just, and they actually suck, but they're still going to grow up thinking, and become an adult thinking that they're a fabulous singer.
But I wonder if those... Well, you think about an American Idol sort of thing.
That's actually what I was thinking.
Well, there are people that actually suck at singing, who are really good writers and performers. Yeah. Bob Dylan is one. I don't know. I always thought the guy from Afghan Whigs, Greg Dooley, mm-hmm. I mean, he's good at what he does, but he's not going to pull off any American Idol.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's yeah. like there's a lot of Tom Waits. You know, there's a lot of people that are unique and have a sound.
And are entertaining
that are not necessarily the voices of angels.
Right.
But they're good at what they do. And they embody a certain persona.
Right.
The Jim Morrison of the Doors, after he released their first record, his father wrote a letter to him and said, "You need to go ahead and give up. You suck. It's like, you've been chasing this stupid dream. You need to quit." And it was the first Doors record that is, vocally, it's phenomenal. You know, like, it's hands down one of the great records in rock and roll music. Right. And his dad's like, "Don't quit your day job, son."
Dream crusher, man.
Right.
Think about how often that might happen, where you may have somebody that would just be an incredible talent, but somebody crushed that dream and stopped them there.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. And I think about, like, with writing. God, man, writing is hard. And it's not even writing a story writing a story is hard. Because you're piecing it together like not even Legos. It's like you're firing the bricks and trying to put them together to mm-hmm. build something. But then you have somebody who just doesn't give two shits, that's just like, "Yeah, don't quit your day job," or start messing with you on your grammar or something. And, like, dreams crushed, you know? I wonder how many people are like that.
Right.
How many people out there that...
You'll never see that, you know, that mind mm-hmm. be able to truly work and do what it was meant to do because of that.
Well, let's get back to some of the music.
Yes.
One of the cool effects in movies is whenever they take completely nondescript songs and they throw them into horror parts of movies and then change the whole tone of the song.
Yeah, feeling behind the song, yeah.
So some non-scary songs used to great effect in horror films. You're watching it above my head right now, but that scene in Gremlins... the Johnny Mathis, "Do you hear what I
yes,
hear?"
Yes,
and whenever she comes home and the house is full of gremlins,
yes,
and they're all hiding from her, but you know that they're there. And then from then on, every time you hear that song, you're like, there just may be a gremlin.
It's a creepy song, yeah. It's definitely changed the tone for sure.
One that completely changed the tone of the song for me is "Long Tall Sally" by Little Richard.
Uh-huh.
When they're at the helicopter scene in Predator.
Yes.
He got all these big, burly special forces guys, and they're just listening to Little Richard in the helicopter. And then later on, whenever he's running around, like after Jesse Ventura gets killed,
uh-huh.
and Mac is chasing him through the woods, and he's like,
yeah.
He's singing the words, yeah. Just completely... completely changes that entire song. I don't hear "Long Tall Sally" without thinking about Mac running through the woods with that little submachine gun.
Right. That chopper scene, I don't know if you remember the joke that was told in that helicopter, but I told that today to someone and it didn't go off very well. Do you remember the joke the guy told about his girlfriend?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I remember when that
every
movie
time
came
I
up,
hear that joke, it just cracks me up, man.
Hawkins, man. He had the words. Hear the words. Mine's as big as a house.
Mine's as big as a house. Me too. Mine's as big as a house.
Such a great song. It's such a great movie.
It is.
And that's, I mean, it's an action movie.
It's a simple movie, but it's great.
It's good and scary.
Yeah.
Like it's
it's suspenseful. It is definitely suspenseful, man.
"Hip to Be Square," the Huey Lewis song. From whenever they put it in American Psycho.
Yeah.
That's whenever he's setting it on, he's talking about... Did you ever read or watch American Psycho?
Oh, yeah. I've watched it a couple times, man. They're rebooting it, if I'm not mistaken.
It was such a bizarre thing, but a lot of people think that the way he was talking was... You know, like he... that was a symbol of his psychosis. He was so completely disconnected from humans that he memorized critical review so that he would have something to talk about in normal society. Mm-hmm. But he had it memorized so perfectly that he's quoting entire reviews.
Right.
And he doesn't have any, like, he doesn't know why. It's like he's using adjectives that people don't use. You use them in writing, but you don't use them in
normal conversation. Right. But he was just trying to fit in.
And that is truly scary. That's the mind of a psychopath right there.
Yeah. That's a great movie.
And, so I've read all this stuff. It's like, oh, he's materialistic. He's this. He's that. It's like, no, he's none of those things. There's worms crawling in his brain, and he's doing the best he can to relate, right. And he's failing.
And to fit in.
And he's failing badly, and that is where the end comes. That's where he snaps, and that's where it goes wrong. Jeepers Creepers. Happy little ditty.
Yes, at one time. Even the remake.
until you realize that, how'd you get those eyes?
It's a reference to something bad that's about to happen.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that part 3 to come out, man. I'm going to rewatch the first two here pretty soon. I love those movies. The storyline is just wow.
The first one, when he just like falls down, like he's like, hey, I'm going to, this weird ass dude's been chasing me around and we found his house, so I'm just going to look down. Crawl down his pipe. And I was like, yeah, that would not be me.
And then especially he heard somebody down there. Hold my feet and lower me as far as you can. Yeah, that wasn't a smooth move by Danny. That's for sure.
Tuesday's Gone by Lynyrd Skynyrd. Have you ever thought of that as a song that would make you think of just massive blood loss?
Of course not, until Rob Zombie entered my life.
Of course, until Rob Zombie does it. Nothing sacred whenever he's around.
His movies employ music so much, and in such a great way. There's a scene in House of a Thousand Corpses where he's playing song, Funky Town or whatever it is. And I think it's Funky Town. And it, as babies, you know, torturing somebody, and it's just the effect of that song on it. It changes that whole movie, that whole scene. It just amplifies everything so much more.
Well, then,
it was Brick House. That's what it was. It was Brick House that she was dancing to.
Did he do a cover of Brick House? I know he did
Boogeyman. He did Boogeyman, but I think he did Brick House too, if I'm not mistaken.
Just the weird stuff that people come up with to cover.
I know. Well, the best, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a YouTube series where they bring in different bands to pick something to cover. And Gore did Kansas. They had Gore come on and do a Kansas song, Wayward Son. And they had them come back and do Billy Ocean, Get Into My Car. Which, to see Gore sing a Billy Ocean song is as entertaining as it gets. But they made it theirs, that's for damn sure. And Dave Brocky could carry those notes for Kansas for Wayward Son. It's amazing, man. It's a pretty good watch. But you got to check those out. They're on YouTube.
There's after Chris Cornell died, there's all these tributes that came through, and I'm a fan of covers. I'm a fan of
covers.
I'm a really big fan of well done covers. And there's some stuff out there that's really well done by people you would not expect. Well, let's just put it like this. Like, I'm not somebody who listens to Taylor Swift. But Taylor Swift has some covers of some interesting songs out there that if you go YouTube it, you'll be like, oh my God. And not only is it a good cover, but it's like, if she was to do that for a living, I would listen to that all the time. Like, it's brilliant, right? But Chris Cornell, you know that I Will Always Love You song by Dolly Parton?
Yeah.
He did a cover of that. See, I always liked the Dolly Parton version. We talked about Dolly in one of our mm-hmm. previous episodes. Whitney Houston came. She did a pretty good job with it. Chris Cornell blows them both away. And it's just he's just being a goof. He's just like, I just learned this earlier today. Here it is. But just the way his voice affects it, it's just like, man, you were born to play this song. It's freaking brilliant. But I love really good covers, and I like, you know, like the This Is Halloween by Marilyn Manson, by the theme song for Nightmare Before Christmas. I am not, we've talked about it before, like Marilyn Manson was not on my spooky list. Marilyn Manson's got some spooky-ish songs, but they're more metal. They're not really what I would call scary or spooky, right, or they don't just kind of fall into that haunted house.
Right.
Compared to like Rob Zombie, who's the soundtrack for all the haunted houses that have ever been haunted.
Because, I mean, there's tons of metal bands out there, like Pantera. Pantera has a lot of really dark stuff, but I wouldn't consider it horror.
I wouldn't, it's not, I mean, it's frightening, but it's not scary.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Well, Marilyn Manson attempted to be scary, but he wasn't spooky, I guess is the the better way to put it. Rob Zombie's spooky.
Oh yeah,
he's Scooby Doo spooky. He's
Rob fucking Zombie. Well, man, of course. You know?
And but you know, you get into like horror music and horror bands, and again, like we've talked about it before, like scary is subjective. So, I was reading something not too long ago that it was just a comic book. And it wasn't even really a scary comic book. It was just, but there was the way some art was and the way the words on the page and kind of the what it meant was like, whoa, that would suck. Like, good effect, right? Like,
right.
Sandman does that a lot. Like, it's true horror, especially in the early issues. It's good, like old House of Mystery horror. Then you got horror bands like the Misfits that are just celebrating it. The Misfits are a horror band. They're not scary, but they're damn cool. So if you really like, if you're looking for a soundtrack to go, you know, you gone and you've bought your 58, was it the Plymouth 58 Plymouth Fury?
Yes.
And you're redoing it, and you're gonna drive around, and you can't find the doo-wop station on the AM radio. go buy yourself an aftermarket CD player and listen to some Misfits. That'll get your blood pumping.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff, man.
You're driving a haunted car. Listen to Misfits. It's good stuff. there's a band that's sort of like the Misfits called Left 4 Dead. That's another one that's kind of in the same vein as the Misfits. I was looking at a lot of bands on YouTube the other night, and there's a lot of bands that are good. They're good with the dark imagery, but they're just more metal. So metal talking about Satan is still metal. If you're talking about like Type O Negative, or he's talking about Lily Munster and her perfume smells like burning leaves, that sort of stuff, that's kind of what's up my alley these days.
Yeah.
You know, Monster Mash. There's so many great covers of Monster
Mash. Oh, yes, there are. No doubt, man.
And then, you know, we've got the king of them all, Rob Zombie.
Yes.
He's one of those guys, I don't know if he was to step up to a microphone and try to sing some Pavarotti, he might be able to, but he's not an American Idol player. But man, that dude can sing.
No shit. he's got some pipes, man.
Total ringmaster.
Oh yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen him in concert, but by far, just a great, great all-around show. Especially, I mean, if you're a fan of Rob Zombie, he could cover so many things. Like we were saying a little while ago, I'm your boogeyman. You know, Casey and the Sunshine Band. He covers Casey and the Sunshine Band well. You know, it makes it his own. Makes it his own song and just runs away with it. But there's so much good stuff. So many good videos. He's current king of horror, almost.
He really is. I mean, like his movies or not, his music's incomparable.
But when you look at the music, the American Horror Show movies, just all across the board, I mean, he's found his niche for damn sure.
Well, he's had his niche since Thunderkiss 65 came out. Yeah!
Well, when the video for Dragula came out, and he was actually in the zombie makeup driving the car in the video, that's when he really just kicked it up a notch and said, this is me.
Yeah. It's funny because I remember, as he continued, I don't want to say like on his path, because he has been putting on costumes. Like, the character of Zombie is different video to video, movie to movie, record to record. But as he went from kind of, I don't know, he had that big cowboy hat, mm-hmm. and then he kind of moved to the top hat, and then he had the X in his head, and like his makeup got white, and then he kind of went red, and then he kind of just changed different things. He's just constantly evolving.
Yeah.
And that's one of those that you're just never going to find somebody who is... He took that Alice Cooper shtick and the heavy metal drive, and he put them together so perfectly. I mean, it's a horror soundtrack. I mean, you throw on any Rob Zombie record.
Oh, yeah.
And...
I got his greatest hits. And you take that greatest hits CD, and it came with a set of videos for each song, too. And it just...
I still can't believe a guy named Rob Zombie has a greatest hits that's actual top 40 hits on American radio. Like, when,
well, the thing about it is
when Elvis was scandalized the United States because he like wiggled his butt, and Rob Zombie's two best lyrics are "Yeah" and "Motherfucker." He's got a greatest hits record in America. I don't mean his best lyrics, but his two most prominent lyrics, the ones you can understand the most. Oh,
God. But he was able to cross over so well. I mean, he became club music. You know, people were dancing in nightclubs to his stuff. And he's doing these remixes of his songs, mm-hmm. and just... That's how he just branched out, and everybody knows who Rob Zombie is. I remember, you know, Thunderkiss came out, and then he was on stage in the movie Airheads. He was in the club that they went to looking for the blonde hair girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, there was a rocket up his ass, and he just shot up, man.
For we good wanted
reason,
more.
For good reason.
We wanted more.
Oh, yeah. When I first saw, like I've told you before, I first saw him on, I was watching Beavis and Butthead, and the Thundercats video comes on, and I was like, this is badass. I have got to get this album.
I told you, I thought it was a joke. Or not a joke, but I thought it was like some over-the-top promo. Like, for everybody, like, nobody would have the balls to take that much crazy shit and just throw it all in one short spot and expect it to succeed. You know what I mean? It's like, if you're talking to a record producer, they'd be like, no, you can do about half of that.
Right, you don't need to put it all in one song.
You know?
Save some.
I watched that, and I was just like, there's no way this is real.
From that
when I found
out
it was real, I was like, dude.
From that opening riff all the way through that song, you don't stop moving and jamming to that song. Mm-mm. It is awesome. And like I said, he never slowed down.
Still not.
Oh, no.
He's still doing. I follow him on Instagram. He's a crazy dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's all over the place.
And I can't wait to see him at a show sometime. Yeah, it would be awesome.
I've seen him like six times.
No, I'm talking about like at a convention.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was going to say like, dude, I've seen him
at a concert plenty of times. to see him at a convention.
Yeah, I'd like to meet the guy.
Oh, yeah.
And be... It'd be all on.
Just for a few minutes. Just get a couple of stories, man. That's mm-hmm. all I need.
Cool stuff. Well, anyway, man, I hope this helps you fill your day with a horror soundtrack. You know?
Look up any songs we mentioned you're not familiar with. Look them up and check them out. There's plenty out there to listen to.
I'm still going to work on my little pet project of compiling all those songs from Christine. Normally, when I read a book, I read it. It's over the shoulder. But that structure just stuck with me. I was like, I know this is his intent, and I also know that I read the book, you know, 20, 25 years ago, so right. I don't know if maybe it had the same effect on me then, but this time I'm reading the story with the song stuck in my head. I know a lot of the songs that maybe I didn't know then, but it's really cool to be able to set a soundtrack to your day.
Right.
You know, whether it's through a playlist or... You know, I've got, for whatever reason, for the last 2 days, I've had the Misfits' Last Caress song just kind of stuck in my head. You know, come sweet death, one last caress. And it's been shaping the way I look at things, because I want to see skulls and day glow and like purple light and stuff.
Right.
But anyway... That's it for now, guys. That's episode 35.
In the can.
We're gonna run through all of the stuff because we got our new business card. So the business the Scary Dad podcast has been brought to you today by Scary Dad himself and Swamp Thang.
Yes.
We are purveyors of murder, mayhem, horror host, and we're both dads. You can find us at Facebook and Twitter at ScaryDad1. You can email me at ScaryDad@ScaryDad.com or ScaryDad2@gmail.com. There is a ScaryDad1, but he's not me, so email him all your hate. Email me all your good shit. ScaryDad.com.
Sweet.
Keep it scary, guys.
Later.